So 21 points. What's your excuse? He was a baby slave. Point number two, God's grace is enough. Point number three, we get promoted to shepherd. Point number four, God's committed to rescuing people. Point number five, Moses could lean on other people's testimonies. Point number six, we have to tell the people what God's told us. Point number seven, got to keep the people's gaze on Jesus by talking of his wonders. Point number eight, the elders were united and they went on exploits together. Point number nine, this thing is supernatural and God intervenes. Point number 10, the only easy day was yesterday. Point number 11, women were validated. Point number 12, God plundered the Egyptians and he will plunder them and he'll get his people restored. Point number 13, God is kind and God restores dignity. 14, look at that same patch about the clothing there. It says, which you will put on your sons and daughters. They'll give you clothes and gold, and you'll put the clothes on your sons and daughters. These were slave children. God is committed, this is the point, God's committed to multiple generations. It's not just them, but he's committed to their kids' restoration. Point number 15. I'll get to that point earlier. Just expand a bit the other one about the kids. But point 15. Their best years were still to come. Moses was 80. Aaron was his older brother. He was 83. The point is this. You're not done until God says you're done. When do we die as Christians? Old or young? No, we die when we're finished. That's the point. I want to be finished at 120. I'm aiming for 120. That's my goal. Because I enjoy life. I love my kids. I love my whatever. I just 120, I reckon. But not if I'm decrepit. If I'm decrepit, then Nick, put me in a field, dig a hole, and just shorten it. Because God's called us to a future. And we surely have to suck the marrow out of life and fulfill the destiny God's given to us. They had just begun. But here's the thing. They had issues. Moses had a stammer. He was a stutterer. He had a speech impediment. I talk too fast. I have a speech impediment. Moses, you know, smelled bad, I think, like I said earlier. Aaron, I don't think, left Egypt like Moses did. So he must have been, you know, a victim of some whippings, that guy. I think Aaron had calloused hands. He's a slave making pyramids, mixing bricks without straw. Aaron was a hard worker, I presume. Some stuff. Moses is a fugitive. He's a murderer. I mean, he's killed a man, that guy. They don't come to the burning bush moment or to Pharaoh with their ducks in a row. They aren't perfect. There's some junk in their trunk, these guys. There's some stuff on the go here. And God says, that's okay. That's okay. Because this is not about you. This is about me. I will plait you. I will weave you. I will build you into what I'm doing, regardless of your weaknesses. I'm not for a minute saying we wink at sin and we've got to deal with the stuff. And God deals with us all the time because he loves us too much to not. I'm talking at a principle level of us being committed to our people. We're just getting started. Wherever you are now, at like 35 like Nick and Shelley, or like 85 like some others, the point is this, we're done when God says we're done. It's very quiet. There's a couple in our church at our site, they sit in the third row from where I am on the stage, like they're kind of over here. He's 78 and she's like 75. He's had like five heart ops, a few bits and pieces replaced over the years, some stuff on the go. The one day, Jock says to me, after a stent insertion in the heart, I said, Jock, how are you doing? He said, I'm a little bit tired. I said, well, Jock, you've had a heart operation. It's normal and you're 74. Says then. He says, yeah, man, I'm not as strong as I was. I said, well, Jock, it was like a month ago, the heart op. He says, yeah, I did some tiling last night, you know, or last yesterday. He says, I couldn't really get to all the tiles. I said, what do you mean, Jock, some tiling? He said, I was on my haunches in the kitchen, tiling the floor. I said, you shouldn't be doing that. He says, yeah, I found that it was quite, I saw my leg. I said, yeah, that's where the vein came from for your heart op. What's the point? He's saying, I'm not finished until I'm done. They come to church, that couple, every single week. Often posies on a Zimmer frame. You've got to pick her up and carry it. It's easier to just, posie, can I carry you in? No, I'm fine, thanks. I gave her a hug and she went, because I was squeezing the life out of her, literally. She's had like emphysema and cancer and she takes garlic tablets to cure this and, you know, whatever else. But she's there. I said, Posie, why are you at church? Don't come. Need a rest. She says, these are my people, Jeremy. I've got to be here. What's the point? If they can, I can. Some young lads asked me the other day, or in fact a few months ago, if we could find some people to mentor them. Varsity kids, they're doing like honors, some first year. They're on the cusp of the rest of their lives. Just full of possibility, full of life, keen. And so we found some guys who were not in full-time ministry, whatever that means. Because I think that's a misnomer, because we're all in full-time ministry. But these folks were not, you know, the name-wearing, obvious leader. Not leading life groups or whatever. They were just, you know, regular Joes who would rock up. You know those people that our churches are full of, the good stock of the earth kind of people. And I said, can you please meet these people and be the mentor leader? What do I know? I said, you've forgotten what they haven't learned yet. Just sit in your lounge once a fortnight or in your boardroom, buy them some pizza because kids respond well to food, and just talk. Just tell them your story. After a year or whatever it was, a guy was a civil engineer, good at bridges, bad at leading connect group or preaching, has 7 girls doing their masters in his boardroom, and he tells them on how to present, you know, a PowerPoint when you go into a boardroom to look for work. Godly girls, deacons, can sing, can lead, but they need to be polished on how to present themselves in a marketplace. My mate Graham, suddenly he walks tall because God at 40 has shown him a niche that he can minister in. There's a staff in his hand. His staff involves PowerPoint presentation and how to fill in a tender document and how to interface with the supply chain manager of a multinational corporation. And he is to say how God can come in the marketplace, because at 40 he's saying, I'm not done yet. I have 40 years left of doing this thing. Another guy's retired. He says, I'm now retired. I've got all the time in the world to mentor people. I'm not serving Pharaoh anymore. I'm now free. Give me another class, please. I'll have more of those. What's the point? If we settle this thing that God is not a God of finite, God's a God of eternity. Time lives inside of his hand. He's outside of time. We're not going to be fudged with this some world creation at 65, I stop. No, I don't. I stop when God says, I stop. Number 16. This is a word to support guys, whatever that means. If you are a support guy, in other words, you aren't the visionary leader of your local church, this is a word for you guys. So if you are the leader of an eldership team, you can have a coffee break now if you want. But here's the point. Exodus 7 verse 10. Please just turn there quickly. Exodus 7 verse 10. Then Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as God commanded. Aaron threw his staff down in front of Pharaoh and the officials, and the staff became a snake. How's that for a little sideswipe there? We've all preached Moses was the snake guy. Moses was the staff guy, and he was. But Aaron throws down the staff, it turns to a snake. Word for support, guys. Aaron was active and didn't just hang about. As a support guy, we have as much responsibility for the health and the faith of our church as the lead elder or visionary, whatever you want to call him, the main dude. He's not the main dude, but that guy. You know that guy, you're all thinking of him right now. We and that guy have responsibility in God to find the thing we got to find to get the people free. Does that make sense? It's very quiet. I think that James led the church in Jerusalem. Because James is the guy who got up and pronounced on the Gentile-Jewish debate, right? After this debate, he says, this is our view. So I suspect that James led that team. But I love the fact that it's not clear. Remember the church of the five, Manaen, Lucius, Simeon, Barnabas, and Saul? I don't know who led that team. I guess it might have been Paul, because I mean, he was wrote the Bible pretty much. But it's not clear. I love that the others, the support guys, equally stood before God and said, we have heard God say, set apart Barnabas and Saul. They carried the weight together as support guys. But the flip side, in verse 19, it says, tell Aaron, comma, dot, dot, dot. As support guys, we have to carry the weight together with the lead guy. But the flip side is, sometimes it's just a question of, tell Aaron, comma, dot, dot, dot. I haven't heard God. You don't need to hear God sometimes. Support guys. I'm a support guy. Sometimes the Lord talks to the leader and I must say, let's go. How high, how far, how wide, how deep, how big, how strong, how long. But I'm not a yes man. That's okay, but for heaven's sake, don't be a no man. What's worse than a yes man is a no man. I'm the anchor. Then just stop it. I'm just too harsh, Nick. Grant, is this too harsh? Because you're more brutal than Nick. I just want to go there, guys. Can I just go there a bit? There's times when my lead elder and I, because we're good mates, have had some robust chats. I put the word robust in brackets. Some robust, good chats, honoring chats, honest chats, no sin chats, where I've said, I'm concerned about that, dot, dot, dot. But actually, if you say we should, then I will. Because I've got to honor my responsibility before God to express my views, but I can't be a no man. Does that make sense? That makes sense. There's a tension here. Truth and tension. I carry. Okay. We have a church that has different sites. There's a few different sites that meet across the region. And we have a number of things that make us one church. So one set of elders, one set of doctrine and preaching series and so on, and one set of finances. But there is locality to how the elders operate. So most elders will almost never leave a local site. Their expression of eldership will be in that local context. We'll meet once a month together to keep macro vision together. Grant, who is our team, will give macro stuff, teaching and vision stuff mainly. But then those sites are led by site captains. Just a word we've coined. It's not a Bible word. It's just a word. And that site captain, I've got six elders on that team that work at the site. I lead that site. But those, they aren't my elders. They're Grant's elders. But they kind of report to me, work with me principally on most stuff as to the expression. So we develop elders, we bring guys through, but the ordination will happen at a one church event. So there's some stuff that's tight and some that's quite loose. Does that make sense, man? Okay. Point number 17. Look at verse 8 and 9 of chapter 10. Over the page, if you've got a paper Bible. Verse 8 and verse 9. Moses and Aaron went back to Pharaoh. Sorry, we're brought back to Pharaoh. Go and worship the Lord your God, but just who will be going? Moses said, we will go with our young and old, our daughters and our sons, with our flocks and herds. So Pharaoh then says, you can't go with your wives and your kids. Just the men must go. And he has that point about women being validated. He says, we will not go, king, just the men. We will only go if our wives and kids go with us. He says, no, you can't. I want you coming back. No, we will not leave. We're happy to be slaves here with you. If it means us going alone as the men, we're not prepared to go. We want our wives and our kids with us as we leave. My son is 2.5, old bear. He's this age. He thinks he's like 15. I found him the other day on the kitchen counter. He put a chair there and climbed up the cupboard handle on the cupboard saying, woohoo! I find him on his push bike, like Evel Knievel, standing on the top of the bike, on the seat, balancing, wanting to go down the driveway. He loves animals. was bitten by a dog on the beach because he went to play with the puppy. He would touch a leopard if he could because he thinks they're all his mates. He's got a Great Dane that's 62 kgs and he swats her if she's in his space like this on her face because he thinks that he can. He's a tough boy. He's a good kid, but he's a blank slate. I've told other children, David and Goliath, I play acted 15, 16 years ago when David cut off the giant's head. I made Grant and Nicolas three boys, well, I let them, with my boys, watch the fight scene in Braveheart. Have I told you that, Nick? I hope I've told you this before. And he was six at the time. They watched that fight scene. It was obviously age-restricted. I mean, unashamedly. The scene where the guy cuts off the guy's knee with a sword, right? And he went, whoa! Afterwards, Noah said to me, who was about eight, he said, Dad, I love war. They left and they took like sticks and they cut off my wife's rose bush heads. They slaughtered the garden afterwards. So I've done that stuff with two other sons and some mates' sons, you know, with their parents' blessing or not. But I've got a two-year-old. So I must now start again with that. He knows nothing about Jesus, this guy. His brothers preach. His brothers lead connect groups. His brothers know about God mission trips. His sister knows Jesus and loves Jesus, but he is a blank slate. And if my conviction is not Pharaoh, I will not go unless our wives and little ones go with us. I might leave Bear behind in Egypt. I might chase after my promised land and forget to get the little ones and the wives released as well. Does that make sense? There's a pressure on us to talk to people who are like us. As far as our gender, our age, our language, our preferences concerned. Can I kill a holy cow or two? I've been part of NCMI for decades. Okay? Nobody in the real world says we are going to ongoingly, in our togetherness, go on missional exploits into the nations. No one says that. Except us in these rooms. Now those words are good words. They make sense to us as we partner for the King and His kingdom. They're good words those. And they make sense and I'll keep using them in this context. But sometimes I create stuff that's not the thing. It's just my thing. So I personally would prefer if worship sounded like Phil Collins and Sting, personally. Because for me, Phil Collins is the best artist in the world, together with Michael Jackson. Okay? I enjoy Jonas Gwangwa, for example. Best saxophonist, I think, alive in the country. But most of the people in my city are under 30 years old. And for them, Phil Collins is a dinosaur. For them, Lecrae makes more sense. And if I just want my thing, I might leave the 15-year-old back in Egypt. A woman who was a deacon came to me and said, oh, I'm so grumpy. I said, apparently. Now I'm paraphrasing. Oh, the worship is so loud. I said, yes. And there's so many drums and smoke machines and guitars. I said, yes. She said, I want to leave. I said, bye. I didn't say it like that. I said it more kindly than that. But here's the point. I said, last week there were seven teenage girls who got saved in a meeting. They came from a high school. They were atheists. And they hated God. And they came along and they saw young people play loud music that I don't like on a stage. And they thought, maybe I can listen to this guy. And they got saved. I said, if I live with my preferences and not learn to be all things to all people, they might not have listened and gotten saved. So we will miss you, darling. Have a great life. She stayed. I didn't say it like that. I'm being unkind. I said it differently to that. I've said to all the people, I said, guys, I will buy you earplugs. I'll put a bowl of earplugs at the back on the way in, next to the pamphlet that gives you the week's announcement stuff, that connect group thingy. I'll give you some earplugs. They're for free. Use them. Old Posey, who was 75 in the shade, I said earlier with the Zimmer frame, sat kind of there on a sofa because the hard chair is too hard for her. So I put a sofa there amongst the other chairs that's softer for her with her shawl, okay? She said to me, Jeremy, I find my chest is quite loose during the meeting. She had emphysema. I said, why? She said, I don't know. I'm okay in the week, but on Sunday, I cough a lot. I'm so sorry. The bass bin was sitting here. I didn't realize this. But the bass bin was palpating her lungs and loosening up. She was just, yeah. So we moved her to the other side. There's a dead spot there. She now says, but Jock gone here. Yeah. And we're missing the preach. Let's go back to the bass bin. That woman gets this. This is not about her. Listen, guys, most of us can worship Jesus to bar black sheep in tongues. Why? We've worshipped for 40 years, 20 years, 10 years. But the 14-year-old who's newly born again cannot. And if my worship is there to suit my needs, I'm selfish. Is this true? Nick, is this true, Ashby? You're nodding, bro. The reality is, it's not for me. It's not for me. I heard a pastor one day say, you were sitting in a meeting and an older guy who was like 65 came and said, I hate our music. He says, guess what? So do I. He said, but you're the pastor. He said, listen, look at that guy across the hall. That's your grandson. He's 14. What's he doing? He says he's worshiping. He said, yes, that's the point. Because he loves the music. You can go home and listen to Dolly and Zech for eternity in your car and worship Jesus and he will enjoy your worship. But don't put that on your grandson who's immature and he needs something that he can hang on to. I didn't mean this point was so long, but I just felt to go there. God's committed to our families. It was 2001 and I was a new elder and I was saying, Lord, I'd love to take my family on a trip across the border to work apostolically. I prayed that prayer. It was a very short prayer, very scary prayer. I had a wife and a 10-month-old firstborn. The next hour, Guy Falpin phones and says, bro, I'm going on a trip to Rwanda. Are you keen? I said, yes, I am, but there's just been a war there, a genocide, and I'm not keen for my 10-month-old baby to go there. He says, yes, neither am I. I said, look, I'm going to pray some more and ask God to open the door. The next morning, Nicholas Charles van Rensburg phones me and says, I'm going to Malawi, bro, on a family mission. Are you keen? I said, yes. How did you know? He says, I didn't. So God and Nick had a conversation. I prayed and this happens. I needed money and time in the diary. God organized both of them amazingly and we went. 10-month-old baby gets a nappy rash somewhere between Yeah and Bite Bridge. So he cried from Bite Bridge to Mutari. You know how far that is, right? You know how far that is. He cried for the whole way. Those nice, rocky, outcrop places, I didn't see that stuff because the kid was crying the whole way. I pitched a tent in Mutari in a lightning storm, graphite poles, thinking I'm going to die one of two ways. Struck by lightning or by being stabbed by my wife in my sleep at night because my baby has screamed for 24 hours. His bum was raw. He had no skin left because the rash just took it all off. We get to Mulanje. On the third day, I'm thinking, what on earth? But for God lining up money, time, and Nick opening a door, I wouldn't have believed God had sent me here. The Malawian said to me, what are you doing with this kid? Why is he wearing clothes? We said, well, you know, clothes are normal. They said, no, they're not under five. Take off his clothes, because it was like 40 Celsius all the time. So we took off his nappy. Within like 4 hours, he was great. Toddling about with his bum in the air, having a great time. Skin grew back, trouble solved, God on the throne, rest is history. What's the point? That boy is now 18, loves Jesus, untouched. That didn't scar him for life. Sometimes we lower a bar, our shame, he's only dot, dot, dot. Our shame to have small kids. No, they get to have small kids who are born into their lives and their space and their reality. Their kids get to be raised in this context. Oh, my child's routine is messed up by a prayer meeting. Then change your child's routine. I'm just saying. I know you guys are all, we don't, this is the converted, yeah? But our people have people that they're giving birth to and are raising and are marrying. And if we don't keep the loftiness of our kids on mission with us, we miss that stuff. I must move on from that point. Point number 18. The next plague, Pharaoh now says, okay, listen, stop with the plagues now, Moses. I'll send your women and your kids. But listen, not your livestock. Moses says, Pharaoh, listen to me carefully. You can see he's grumpier and grumpier, old Moses. He gets angrier and angrier. He says, listen, in his stutter, I won't try and stutter because it might be offensive, but he stutters and says, listen to me, Pharaoh. We don't know what our God wants us to sacrifice when we get to the wilderness. He's told us to let the people go so they can worship me in the desert, but he's not told us exactly what we must sacrifice. And in case he asks us for all of the livestock, we're not prepared to leave a single hoof behind. It says that. Read it. It's in verse. Where are we? Somewhere. Verse 26 of chapter 10. Our livestock too must go with us. Not a hoof left behind. We have to use them in worshiping the Lord. And until we get there, we will not know what we are to use to worship the Lord. I love it. I love it. I went to the patch where I thought, I'm tired, Lord. I am tired. December 2018, I was like on a mountain saying, Jesus, I'm tired. I've given and given and given. You know those moments that none of you have? I have it. I'm tired. And I saw this verse. God said to me, my boy, do not settle for leaving a single hoof behind. The elements of territory in your marriage, in your fathering, in your church, in your personal physical health, in your finances, in your business, there's elements of pens, of livestock, there's liberty, there's fields to play in, there's people to set free, there's people to reach, they're unsaved people. It's not your church, but I've given you the privilege of accessing those people and those spaces. And if you put down this staff, you might just leave a couple of hooves behind. And in your future that I've called you to, you will regret that you can't worship me with that stuff. That is amazing. It sets you free. Suddenly, I'm full of power. I want to get up again off my face and go and preach the gospel. Because if I stopped at that point, there might be people that got saved this year that I would not have gotten to heaven with and said, Jesus, at your feet. Yes, a hoof. No disrespect intended. Yes, a hoof at your feet. I can lay down before you. Because I did not rest and settle for leaving a single thing behind. Because maybe my Savior expects worship from me in the wilderness, in heaven one day, of something I have contended for now and fought for. I will not settle to see my people in bondage because God wants them free so they can worship Him. Is that making sense, guys? We can't settle by leaving a single thing behind. Tired of disciplining my kids. Tired of loving one's wife. Tired of putting up with one's husband. Tired of praying for the people. Tired of searching God's word for His truth for the people. If I stop those things, maybe I'm leaving a hoof behind. We're called to contend because maybe He'll use that for His worship one day. And if we settle now, we miss that worship opportunity. Last 3 points very quickly before we land. What's in your hand, Moses? The Red Sea. Fast forward a few chapters to the Red Sea. I don't think it's reasonable, Lord, to ask the question, what's in your hand? Remember the story. He has an 80-year-old guy, stutterer, with a stick. Got a million and some change people behind him who are ex-slaves. They come to an ocean that you can't go across. Locke could swim it possibly, but they couldn't. They're wearing dresses for heaven's sake. They're at the lake, at the sea. There's mountains to the side and a hornet's nest of angry, bereaved, powerful, evil, Satan-inspired Egyptians behind them. Moses says, we trust the Lord, and starts crying out to God. Read, it says that. God says, what are you crying out for? That's not a reasonable question, Lord. Surely. I'm just saying, I mean, Lord, what do you mean what am I crying out for? I would have thought it's obvious because you're omniscient and all that. What's in your hand? Sick. Yes. Then get on, Moses. That's the sense I get. It's God saying to like the archangel, look at the sock. Doesn't he get it? Flippin' stiff, just go to the sea. But it's the sea, Lord. Yes. What's in your hand? A stick. Go on, Moses. Stop whining. I'm that guy. Often, what's in your hand, my boy? Oh, it's a stick, Lord. Yes, you've seen it turn to a snake before. That gifting of yours, that preaching gift, that person, that budget, that building, that testimony, that dream, that calling, that dot, dot, dot. You've seen that thing being put to use by me, for me, through me. Stop whining at me, Moses. Just get on and open the sea. I get that it's a very different thing. Turning a river to blood is hard enough, but turning an ocean to dry land, that's the next level. So God does grow us, does stretch us. Lord, I did it well then, but this is a whole different ballgame. I know my girl. I know my boy. But in your hand is the staff I gave you. 40 years, you've held that staff. You know this staff. That's your gifting. That's your thing. I gave that thing to you. We did Strength Finder. Some mates of mine and I. It's a tool to help work out what your strengths are and so on. My top five are all sins. You know where Paul says, put off those things. Those are mine. There's color coding. The red ones are all like the evil ones. Mine are all red, top five. The last one on my list, number 36, is empathy. That's a fruit of the spirit, that. Loving kindness. It's the last one on my list. So I think, oh, feeling guilty watching my thing. Oh, no way. Oh, it's a sin. I don't. God's saying, but that thing I've given you, my boy, that's a staff in your hand. Use that thing. I'm not saying set thing for sin. I'm saying take what I've given you and use it for my glory. How do we get off yearning for the next man's ministry when God's given us a ministry of our own? Why would you covet your neighbor's church when God's given you a church of your own? We don't like the word covet because we're so holy. But I look at Craig Rochelle. I look at his biceps and his six-pack. I look at his Instagram post and think, oh, I wish I was that guy. I don't admit it, but it slips into my head. I listen to Jake's preaching. And he's sweating on his bald, massive bald head. And he's sweating and he's got this purple suit and, you know, polka dot yellow pants and pointy crocodile skin shoes. And he's preaching up a storm for like 4 hours and the people are loving it. I'm thinking, my people are grumpy after 20 minutes. I want that guy's ministry. And God's saying, no, son, my boy, you're so slow to get it. I gave you your own staff, not that staff. I'm trying to be kind and loving and so on. But guys, just hear my heart, yeah. Why do I cover that guy's thing? I have my own thing. Number 20, chapter 15, after the Red Sea account. There's a thing called the Song of Moses. That's the heading in NIV. The Song of Moses. Then Moses and the Israelites sang to the Lord. Guys, he's 80. He's a shepherd. He didn't speak for 40 years apart from saying, come on, guys, there's some water here. He's few words a year, Moses, I suspect. I've heard 80-year-old guys talking. They're pretty croaky. Middle Eastern sun, some sand, some silence. I think Moses sang badly. I'm just saying. I don't think this was Josh Groban right here. This was a bad voice. But as a leader, he gets this. We as leaders need to lead our people in worshiping Jesus Christ. I'm not saying on the microphone, for goodness sake. Most of us shouldn't take the mic during worship. But I'm saying this. We have to make space for our people to keep the main thing the main thing. What's the main thing? The elevation of Jesus Christ. I had a worship leader at our church who was a good kid, full of faith, full of passion, loving Jesus, loving worship. And I saw him dip each morning. I'd hear the practice, and the guy's in heaven. He's worshiping God, passionately. At the first song goes, woof, he's down 40%. I said to him, bro, I've watched you for weeks. What's wrong? He says, Jeremy, there's a woman in the seventh row. When I sing a certain volume or I move a certain way, she looks at me with these evil eyes and daggers, and she is terrifying. She's since died, thank the Lord, but nah. I don't mean that. I don't mean that. But she has since died. But here's the point. I said, bud, listen to me. Listen to me. I said, the people here who take their cue from you, when you dip because of your fear of somebody who has an issue of our own, you compromise the rest of the people. He said, what do I do? I said, two options. Close your eyes or look at me. I said, look at me. So I've said often in worship, look at me, to him from the side. Look at me. And suddenly he's like, whoa. What's the point? That guy takes his cue from the front row. I said, when she comes to you again and whines, you say to her, madam, please talk to that guy, because he's told me to break a string, which I did, and to break a stick, and to offend you. So please talk to him. And she did. And I responded, and, you know, she died, me and her friends. No, we were good friends. We were when she passed away. But here's the point. I've got to set the guy free. I can't chicken and say, oh, you deal with the strongest forehead is, yeah, because God's put us in front of the pack to lead the people into it. I'm rushing a bit. Last point. This is the start of tomorrow's thing, but Exodus 25, verses 1 to 8. Please, I won't read it now. But the story is they're off the mountain or on the mountain getting the instructions for the tabernacle. And God says, I want you to build this like this and that like that and use these skins and that purple and this gold and that acacia wood and 1.5 cubits, yeah, and 1.5 cubits there and 1 talent of gold, yeah. And it's a whole story. Lots of stuff. Then he says, tell the people to give ... purple cloth and gold and silver and raiment and skins. He gives them many options of what to give. Verse 8a, and tell the people to make. Here's the point. They call to both give and make. And this is the point. As elders, we've got to set the people free to both give and to make. I think that often the givers don't like to be makers. Oh, I just work in business. I earn money and I pay my tithe. So I'm a giver. No, you get to give and you have to also make sometimes. Oh, I can't pour coffee. Yes, you can. I'm the CEO of a blue chip. So what? The bathroom needs to be mopped. Have a great day, sir. What's the point? They get to give and they get to make. But the flip side is often us who are the makers doing the work of the ministry think, oh, I can't give. I'm just a maker. No, even the makers had to give. I've heard leaders say, ooh, tithes are tight this month. I'm going to have to tighten the belt, yeah. And they're good people. They tighten the belt inwardly and sometimes outwardly. God's saying, actually, maybe we should be givers and makers. Flip side of the same coin. I'm done, Nick.